Welcome to Vega's World. It's time to party, and I'm your most excellent host, JC Vega, thanking you all for tuning in. Now, today's episode was supposed to be the Three Ninjas Kickback watch-along episode. However, our co-host, Aaron Nova, has come down with the space flu. And rather than infecting the entire galaxy, specifically myself and Kate and Green, we decided to wait until Nova is 100% healthy so we can have all the fun with that episode and not him not miss out. So today we're going to be talking about the Riddick franchise, specifically The Chronicles of Riddick and the third film, simply titled, wait for it, it's going to be a doozy, Riddick. Before we dive into that fun topic, let's talk a little bit about some of the news around Hollywood concerning some of our favorite television shows and movies, shall we? Stranger Things 5. The plan was for it to come out in 2025. However, that is not set in stone. And speaking to Variety, Matt Duffer said, as a lot of it hasn't been decided in terms of exactly the release dates and cadence, that's one of the reasons I'm not allowed to talk about it. We're going on a call in about a couple of weeks about it. I just know it was very important for us and Netflix that we get it out this year, but even that is quite the push, Ross Duffer said. Working as fast as we possibly can. Even season 4, we cut that so tight. We were dropping in visual effects shots the day after the launch. So hopefully we will be a little more on schedule this year now that it's just sort of climbing up another hill as we head towards the final finishing touches. Well, to that I say, Duffer Brothers, you need to get it together. I'm not waiting another frickin' year for this. It's already been 3 years since Stranger Things 4 came out. You already split that in half. Well, I appreciate that because most episodes were over an hour and a half and it felt like watching a bunch of movies in a sitting. However, like, the longer you wait, the less people are going to care about it because it's out of the public psyche. And a lot of people felt it's kind of taken a dip since the first couple of seasons. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the rest of the world reacts, but I hope that it comes out sooner rather than later. I understand the need to get it right and wanting to balance everything and make sure it is exactly as you would like it to be. So I can kind of be sympathetic, but the fan in me wants it out now. Right frickin' now. Well, maybe not right now, but very soon. It's 2025. You promise. I can wait till May. I'll be generous. Hell, even October. Let's go for October, shall we? Hopefully you get it done. Scream 7. Now, I want to make this very, very clear. I am not a horror film fan by any stretch of the imagination, so therefore I am not into the Scream franchise at all. However, all the behind-the-scenes news surrounding this franchise has intrigued me as of late. Let's go with the first bit, shall we? Neve Campbell was not in Scream 6. She was not in it because she was given a salary that she felt did not equate to her value to the franchise. Now, she's Sydney Prescott. Hello, Sydney. You know, she's the main character. She's been through, like, a bunch of different Ghostface killers and survived it all. And then the last movie, they said, oh, she's living off somewhere with her family, being safe. Now, I'm guessing the producers are like, it's been 2 decades since Party of Five came out. No one gives a crap anymore about Neve Campbell. We don't need her. We've got Melissa Barrios. She's playing Sam Carpenter, the illegitimate daughter of Billy Loomis, the first Ghostface killer. And we got this whole storyline going where she's just like her dad. She's got killer tendencies. She's seeing him in visions and such. Could she become him soon? We don't know. But, however, Melissa Barrios was fired from Scream 7 due to comments she made about the Israel-Hamas wars because the studio felt they were anti-Semitic. A couple days after the announcement that she was fired, Jenna Ortega dropped out of Scream 7 because she is supposedly claimed of scheduling conflicts with the Wednesday series on Netflix. That could be true. It also could be that she's standing by her co-host for her firing, which was kind of absurd when you think about it, but that's neither here nor there. So what do they have to do now? They're scrambling. They don't have stars. They started this whole new storyline. So what do? They back up the Brinks trucks to Neve Campbell's house and said, hey, do you remember when we said that no one cares about Party of Five, The Craft, and Wild Things, and that you're just not that important? Well, hey, we're sorry. Here's a boatload of money. Will you come back? And she was like, yeah, I guess so. My schedule's free. So she's back in the movie. Christopher Landon, the director of Happy Death Day 2 and various Paranormal Activity films, was supposed to be the director of Scream 7. And right around the time that Melissa Barrios was fired, Jenna Ortega left the project, Christopher Landon says, I guess now is a good time as any to announce that I have formally exited Scream 7 weeks ago. This will disappoint some and delight others. It was a dream job that turned into a nightmare, and my heart did break for everyone involved. Everyone. But it's time to move on. I have nothing. So what do? They get Christopher Williamson, the original writer of the Scream series, to direct Scream 7. And not only is he coming back and Nev Campbell's coming back, but Scott Foley, who played Roman Bridger, who is the Ghostface in Scream 3, is coming back. I don't know how, his character's dead. Perhaps he's going to be some sort of Ghostface ghost and taunt his sister. I have no idea. But the big, big, big news is that finally, after years of speculation and asking him and pleading for him, Matthew Lillard is coming back as Stu Mocker. And I guess, to me, this all screams like damage control, and though we started this whole sequel-requel thing, but what if we go back to the old stories, shall we? I am not exactly sure how he'll come into play, but I know some of the other cast members from the previous two films are going to be returning, so we'll see how they bridge the gap between that and explain away Sam Carpenter's absence, as well as Jenna Ortega's character, whose name escapes me, and I'm not bothering to look it up because it doesn't matter anymore. But I thought that was pretty interesting. Because, like, I'll be honest, I saw the first Scream film. I saw bits and pieces of 3. I was in and out of sleep when Scream 4 was on. Scream 5, one of the two. Actually, both of them. They were both on at some point, and I here and there watched it. The last Scream movie I watched just out of morbid curiosity, because I heard so much about it, so let me watch it. Now my Paramount Plus is tainted with a bunch of horror films that I have no desire to watch. Come on, Paramount. I watched one horror film. That doesn't mean I want to watch a litany of horror films. Give it a break, will ya? Speaking of that, I saw that Tatiana Maslany is going to be in the new Stephen King adaptation of The Monkey. And as much as I like Tatiana Maslany, and I thought she was the bomb in Orphan Black, I mean, she played over 20 different characters and made them all unique. And I love her work as an actress. Yes, I even like She-Hulk. Don't fight me on this. I don't care to listen. But I don't think I'm going to see The Monkey. I don't care if she's in it. I just don't have any desire to watch horror films. Not exactly my favorite genre. Granted, I did enjoy John Carpenter's Halloween. I liked that film. I mean, it was more about the atmosphere than the gore and the killing and all that. He made it dreadful. That's good. From Dusk Till Dawn, I mean, I guess that's kind of a horror film. It's more of a crime drama, I guess. Well, in the first half at least. But that I can handle or deal with. Everything else when it comes to, you know, Paranormal Activity and other slasher stuff, just not really interested. Give me something else. Vin Diesel, you know him, you may love him. He's a big, burly, bald guy with a deep, gravelly voice who drives around a Dodge Charger and talks about family. He seems like he'd be a knuckle-dragging buffoon who's really into cars and just an action guy. Well, joke's on you, kids. This man is a nerd. A big, old nerd who just happens to have gigantic muscles and a charger, and talks about family. But nonetheless, Pitch Black was his first ever leading role, and that film was a sci-fi horror film where he starred as Richard B. Riddick, an escaped convict who's being taken in by a bounty hunter, and on this ship, they crash land on some desolate planet that's gonna have an eclipse pretty soon, and in that planet, during that eclipse, these creatures who like to be in the dark are gonna come after them, and Riddick, who had this operation done over 20 menthol cools, allows him to see in the dark because he was in a prison where there would be no sunlight or any light in general, so he wanted to be able to see what was going on around him. And while they were filming this movie, writer and director David Tui and Vin Diesel thought there was more to the character that they could do in future installments. So they decided the next film would not be a horror film. They would not deal with the same creatures of that film or similar creatures. Instead, they would switch genres entirely and still try to maintain the dark tone of the first film. Thus, The Chronicles of Riddick. So what do you do when you decide to do a little more world building and deepen the backstory of your main character? you retcon a few things. Instead of his eyes being a surgery done in prison by another inmate, it's actually because he is from a race called Furians, and they all have this nocturnal sight. And he was strangled with his umbilical cord. However, it was done because of the fact that some warlord found a seer and heard that his death would come at the hands of a Furian, so he opted to kill all the young unborn or newly born children of Furia with their umbilical cords, freakishly enough, and this guy just becomes the Lord Marshal of the Necromongers. The Necromongers are essentially space Romans in a death cult. They have this philosophy that life is a disease and is not natural to the order of the universe. And the only way that life can truly be respected and prosper is in a place called the Underverse. And that's their promised land. And you must either join the Necromongers or die. And they are led by Lord Marshal Thylaw, which is why they are on the planet New Mecca in order to take over and purge it or get people to convert. Just so happens that Riddick showed up around the same time because there was a bounty put on his head, and the only person who knew where he was Iman, a man who he saved along with a young child named Jack. She was left in his care, so he wanted to know what was going on. Well, Iman tells him that he only gave him up because the world was in danger from the Necromongers, and that Arion, who is an elemental, she has the ability to float and become ethereal in a sense, where she can like float along and make her body translucent. It's really awesome. She's played by Judi Dench. And let me just say that Judi Dench is acting below her weight class in this one. I mean, aside from Keith David, who was the voice of Goliath in my youth, a part of the show Gargoyles, tremendous voice, tremendous actor. Besides him, she is out acting everybody she's in a scene with. Vin Diesel tries his best, and he's a big fan of Judi Dench, and that's one of the reasons why she was in that movie. And, apparently it earned her credit with her grandkids and kids because they loved the Fast and the Furious in those films. But nonetheless, it's the whole chosen one stereotype. And I gotta say, I appreciate the attempt at world building. The Necromongers are an interesting race of people. I don't even call them a race. They're more of, I mean, a cult. Let's just call it a cult, for Christ's sake. A weird cult, space cult, that had a lot of layers to them if you decided to explore them. I mean, they have a philosophy, you keep what you kill. There's a character, Lord Vako, and his wife, Dame Vako, who are trying to attempt a coup, and she wants her husband to kill the Lord Marshal Xylaw in order to take his place as Lord Marshal because of his paranoia due to the fact that Riddick is alive and he's a Furian and he's moving away from the planned objective for the Necromongers, and she wants her husband to have all the power, and he wants to go along with the plan but also keep true to his word and his post and be loyal to the cause of the Lord Marshal because he is law. It's really interesting stuff in that aspect. What falls apart for me is Jack's story. Well, her name in this film is Kira. She changes her name for whatever reason, and she resents Riddick for leaving her on New Mecca instead of sticking by her side or letting her come along. But Riddick was like, being by his side was no place for a child, and that he was always gonna have bounty hunters on his head, and it just wasn't a good idea for her. I wish we would have had more time with her to develop the character instead of her just showing up in the middle of the movie when Riddick goes to the prison planet Crematoria. What a weird name for a prison planet, by the way. It sounds like a place you would cremate people, but nonetheless, the concept of the planet being ridiculously hot to the point where you're gonna turn to ash if you were out in the sun versus super, super cold, and the only way that they can inhabit the planet is being underground. That was neat. But back to Kira's story, I wish we would have had more time with her. I would have loved some flashbacks of her and becoming a mercenary, or maybe moments she had with Riddick before he decided to leave New Mecca and go off to be on his own. Something, just something more than what we got, because it felt almost like she was more of a plot device than a character. And I'm sure that was not their intentions with how her story ends in the Chronicles of Riddick, when she sacrifices herself to save Riddick from the Lord Marshal. And though she converts to being a necromonger, they could have played with that just a little bit more, or maybe even started the movie with her being a member of the necromongers instead of being on a prison planet. Something different than what we got. That's the main issue for me, because there was a lot of meat on the bone for this little girl who grew up idolizing Riddick since the day she met him and decided to follow in his footsteps. And maybe that could have caused a rivalry down the line. Instead of, you know, wanting to be like him, she's, when she does become a mercenary, she wants to track him down, not just to bring him in, just to be like, yeah, see, I'm better than you. I did this. I caught you. Because the whole side plot of going to Crematoria to find Kira was, it took away from the Necromonger invasion of Helion Prime, which was the whole basis of this story to begin with, you know, before he went off to the prison planet. I get he got picked up by bounty hunters, before the reason he went to that planet, or he persuaded them to bring him there so he could pick up Kira. But yeah, could have done something a lot different with that character and that whole story, and just kept it more focused on the Necromonger invasion. Also, props to David Tui for giving the Necromonger such a detailed backstory. You don't get to see it a whole lot in the film, but in the supplemental material, like the box set I got for Chronicles of Riddick and the novelization, apparently they go really deep into the Necromonger lore. And just even the style of the ship and their armor was pretty neat. It had this like gothic, old Eastern European Borke architecture going on, especially for the ship in Basila, I think it's called. But yeah, it looks really cool. The Lord Marshal's helmet with three faces is really gnarly. Love that. That was a cool little thing. Vako's hairstyle, his undercut, super long rocker look thing going on, super dope. Carl Urban, fantastic actor, by the way. His arc was pretty interesting. It could have added some more layers to the story, but yeah, it just, as a whole, it didn't fully come together for me, and I wish they would have maybe took another draft to hone the story, because again, I like the idea of the lore expansion and the Necromongers and the Elementals. That's an interesting race of people who their abilities, you know, mimic that of the four elements, water, fire, wind. Pretty neat. We only met Judy Dench's character, Arion, but, you know, been cool to explore that, especially like in future miniseries, movies, or what have you. This movie suffered a lot from the tell, don't show aspect of it. And I mean, there are some cool visuals in there, but instead of having things organically happening or showing how these characters operate, like they say Judy Dench is a spy and she's very abstract in her thinking and how she feels the world works and how the elementals partake in society. That'd have been cool if we would have showed that a little more, like have her be a lot more cryptic, or another elemental being cryptic and just playing everything close to the vest, something like that. We could have gone deeper with that. We had some intrigue, I guess, in the idea that Lady Vako wanted her husband to usurp Lord Marshal and take his place as the Lord Marshal, and the whole you keep what you kill aspect of the Necromongers. And it sounds like a lot of the other Lord Marshals before him had that happen to them. So yeah, it's a cool little dynamic they could have, you know, played with more throughout the movie. And again, just given more depth to Kira and more interaction with her and Riddick to play off of. Could have done a lot of things different. This feels like the whole Chronicles of Riddick movie itself could be turned into a mini series of some sort. Just saying. You know, David Tui, if you hear this, holla at your boy. It's still a fun watch, given all the flaws of the film, don't get me wrong, but it's not necessarily a great movie. And I don't know, the whole Riddick franchise itself is such a niche cult classic thing because I don't hear a whole lot of people talking about it. It's not something that comes up in a lot of great sci-fi franchises. It's a lot of fun. Like I've mentioned, like some of the lore they put in. I mean, Vin Diesel just really loves this character. I mean, I get it. It was his first leading role in Hollywood, and he brought the character to life. He feels a deep connection to it. I mean, the dude created an entire video game studio to release Riddick games, two of them being Escape from Butcher Bay and Assault on Dark Athena. Like, the dude is a big nerd and he loves this world. And apparently those games aren't too bad either. Their games are a lot better than the movies. And this movie, Chronicles of Riddick, is considered a bit of a box office bomb. I mean, it had a budget of $105 million with a box office of $115 million. And David Tui has said if they would have been given the green light for a third film, they would have ventured into the underverse and had a big, dark Lord of the Rings style film, but that was not to be. So David Tui and Vin Diesel got the rights to the film back, and they did that because Universal Studios wanted Vin Diesel in Tokyo Drift at the end. And his only stipulation was, or he had two stipulations apparently. One was make him producer for the Fast and the Furious franchise, and two, give him the rights to the Riddick franchise. And they were planning to make a smaller scale movie, more in the vein of Pitch Black. It was simply titled Riddick. It kind of details what happens after the Chronicles of Riddick movie because at the end of that film, Riddick manages to kill the Lord Marshal, and in doing so, it made him the Lord Marshal of the Necromongers. And a lot of people are uneasy about this because he doesn't follow the tenets of a Necromonger. He doesn't fully believe, or doesn't believe at all, in the faith. And he decides that he's gonna relinquish the title to Vako if Vako gets him to Furia. Well, as he gets dropped off, he finds out that the planet he's on is not Furia, and the General Krone tries to kill him, and he ends up falling off a cliff and buried under a, landslide. They think he's dead, and he's left alone on this desolate planet to survive. He finds a orphaned baby jaguar dog beast thing. They don't give it a proper name, but it looks really cool. And he uses that to help him navigate this planet. There's these scorpion snake-like creatures that are called mud demons. I don't remember them saying that in the film, but that's the wiki title and everything that has to do with Chronicles of Riddick. That's what they seem to dub those monsters. But he notices a storm coming, and he realizes if this thing's around, there's probably more terrifying things like it, and I don't want to be here. So he finds this little vacated base, and it seems like I guess it's a mercenary outpost where people stop by and, ration off things and chill for a bit. Well, he, signals off a distress signal, and two mercenary ships come to find him, and he tries to use them against each other in order to get one of the ships so he can get off that planet. It's really neat. John's father comes around in this film as one of the mercenaries. He wants to know from Riddick what happened to his son, and he is played by Matthew Nables, who I know from the Green Arrow series as Ra's al Ghul. It's fantastic, Ra's al Ghul. Pretty fun in this movie. Dave Bautista is also in this film as the character Diaz. He's pretty funny in it. Katie Sackhoff plays Dahl. A lot of fun back and forth between the two mercenary groups. One is top-notch professional. The other is sort of a rugged ragtag group who seem to be in over their head, at least the leader, and he's very cocky, and which ends up being his downfall in a lot of instances. And, Riddick uses all that to his advantage in order to try to, get them to kill each other off so he could steal a ship and get off that planet. I really like this film. I think this might be a bold, bold claim, but out of the four films, or at least the three theatrical films, we'll say, I feel like the third film is probably the best one out of the bunch. It's more of a streamlined story. It gives us character moments, but it builds to the end all the way through, and you don't get a whole lot of lag. Some of the writing is still a bit cheesy and not very good, and especially in some of the dialogue, it's so ham-fisted in some aspects that it's like, oh, come on, man. Vin Diesel has a lot of swagger, but even he can't pull off some of those corny one-liners, man. That's the only thing negative I'll say about it, but as again, it's the best one of the three. And I like how it is more boiled down back to basics, almost like Pitch Black. It's not the exact same thing, and it's not as claustrophobic, but it does give the same vibe. It still continues that dark element from the first two films. I'll give them credit for that. I just feel it's a more tightly written story. I mean, Pitch Black is really good. Don't get me wrong, the characters are well defined there. Fry, Johns, even Iman and Jack, with what little they give Jack. I mean, she pretty much mimics Riddick and shows how much she adores this guy, even though she probably shouldn't because he's a killer. But anyway, yeah, no, the best one out of the bunch. And they leave it pretty open-ended because he's still on his quest to find Furia. And as of last year, they began production on the film, and it is called Riddick Furia. And it's, from what little is around the internet, it's said that he goes to the planet, he thinks it's gonna be, desolate and no life there, but there are Furians still alive, and there's a war being raged, and they are the type of people that are even beyond Riddick in a sense, and he's a pretty big badass dude. So I'm looking forward to whenever the day comes that that movie is out, I will watch it. I again it's this franchise is interesting again because it's not necessarily popular. It's sci-fi, so it's hard to get somebody to entrust you with a lot of money for a niche product like the Riddick franchise. But I love the characters. I'll say that. It's fun. It is fun for what it is, and I would watch it again and again. I do own Dark Fury. I own the Arrow Video's release of Chronicles of Riddick with the theatrical cut, director's cut, and the matte version, I think. There's some other version they've. But in talking about this, I watched the director's cut, and the director's cut, there's slight differences, obviously, with any director's cut versus theatrical cut, but there's a character, Shira, who is teased in the director's cut. She has a brief appearance in Escape from Butcher Bay. It's alluded to the fact that she is a Furian, and she imbues Riddick with a power in order to, like, blast the Necromongers far away with this big ol' silvery energy bursts. Really neat, but perhaps she will show up in this fourth installment and further be a guide to Riddick on this planet. But a big takeaway is, again, it's a lot of fun, very niche. It's a very fascinating thing, because usually when an actor does the one for me, one for them business model, it's usually a big major motion blockbuster and then a small independent film that's character driven and not a whole lot of people are going to see, but it fulfills their creative desires. But in this case, the Riddick franchise is a multi-million dollar sci-fi budget that Vin Diesel likes to pour himself into, and then he loves the character and loves that world. I feel like he probably enjoys working on Riddick more than he does the Fast and Furious franchise. This is probably definitely his one for them, one for me franchise, even though he does have a big hand in what goes on in the Fast and Furious franchise. But I would definitely love like a mini series involving other characters. Like maybe Riddick could be mentioned or like show up and it'd be like a stand-in or something like that. So he's there, but we follow these different characters and further, dive into the world of Riddick without him being there. Almost like a Gotham Central story where like it follows the detectives of Gotham. And Batman kind of shows up here and there, but he's like a peripheral character. That could be neat, but again, it is a niche franchise. I don't know why I keep saying niche. It's a niche franchise that not a whole lot of people would be interested in it, and I don't know if a Netflix, a Hulu, or whoever, whatever streaming service would want to invest in such a niche product. But who knows? I could be wrong. Maybe that's something that could be explored. Maybe if Riddick Furia does very well at the box office. But overall, I just appreciate Vin Diesel's passion and his love for science fiction and nerd culture in that aspect. Again, like, dude made a whole movie based around his Dungeons and Dragons character, The Last Witch. Not necessarily a great movie, I saw it, but I found that just fascinating how much of a nerd this guy is. Like, you wouldn't suspect that looking at it. It's kind of like Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill's got that strong jaw, super jacked dude, but like, he's like the biggest nerd, so much of a nerd that the showrunner of The Witcher wanted him fired because he was annoying her with how much he wanted it to be more like the book instead of what they wanted to do. That in itself is pretty funny. Maybe I could dive into that one day and Henry Cavill's filmography or The Witcher itself, because I've only seen the first season. I watched a little bit of the second one and I fell off of it once I found out that Henry Cavill was leaving the show and they were replacing him with one of the Hemsworth brothers. Not Chris, the one of the other ones. I think there's only one. Liam? Yeah, Liam Hemsworth. Which is a wild, like, talk about a step down, too, though. Like, I'm sorry. It's gonna be hard to follow Henry Cavill. He was fantastic as Geralt, the Rivia of Rivia. Geralt? Geralt? I think it's Geralt. I'm sorry. For those Witcher fans out there, forgive me for butchering the name, but nonetheless, he is a phenomenal actor and especially fantastic in that role. And going to Liam Hemsworth, that's a huge downgrade. So I fell off of that series. But nonetheless, that was some of my rantings, thoughts on the Chronicles of Riddick and the Riddick movie. I wanted to give y'all something this week, again, because Aaron Nova has been battling the space flu, and we don't want the world to end because he's got the space flu. Could you imagine? Nova brings apart the end of civilization. I don't want that on my conscience. I don't want that on your conscience. I don't want that on his conscience. I want us to all have fun when we have the watch along, and he's a part of that. So I hope you enjoyed this. Next time, we will definitely have the kickback watch along. After that, we will begin my From Dusk Till Dawn season one breakdown. I've been wanting to do an episode around that TV show for so long now, and I'm finally gonna get around to doing it. Some starts and stops in my watch along because I haven't watched it in a couple of years. I think I've seen it though like five times total since the whole series started, and it's gonna be really fun. Again, From Dusk Till Dawn, that movie is one of my favorites of all time. George Clooney as Seth Gecko. Chef's kiss. That was his first major movie role too, which is funny to think about. His first major movie role is a B movie grindhouse vampire action film. Kind of funny, but hey, it's Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino. How could you say no to them? Anyways, guys, thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Party on and good night.